The Helly Kesser Jane Show airs Wednesdays, 3 p.m. Eastern. The podcast always available online at HellyKesserJane.com. You saw God or felt God? Or
absolutely experienced God fully.
Wow. Seeing God. Meeting spirits. Did you know that 3 out of 4 Americans believe that there is an afterlife? Today on the Helly Kesser Jane Show, we explore life after death with some of the most important voices on the subject, including New York Times bestselling author of Proof of Heaven, Dr. Edmund Alexander, Dr. Elizabeth Menhus, author of My Son in the Afterlife, renowned medium Jamie Butler, and in a first for this interviewer, a conversation with the late Eric Medhus, author of a brand new memoir, My Life After Death, A Memoir from Heaven. Hi, I am Helly Kesser Jane. But before we begin, the Helly Kesser Jane Show is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Get a free audiobook and 30-day trial today by signing up at www.audibletrial.com/ The Helly Kesser Jane Show. And remember, The Helly Kesser Jane Show is always available online at HellyKesserJane.com and a host of venues including iHeartRadio, Stitcher.com, Spreaker.com, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and Blog Talk Radio. Dr. Edmund Alexander is a renowned academic neurosurgeon who has spent 54 years honing his scientific worldview. Having practiced 15 years at the Brigham and Women's and the Children's Hospitals and Harvard Medical School in Boston, he thought he knew how the brain and mind worked. And then the doctor became the patient when Dr. Alexander's own brain was attacked by a rare illness. The part of the brain that controls thought and emotion and in essence makes us human shut down completely. For 7 days, he lay in a coma. And just as his doctors considered stopping treatment, Dr. Alexander's eyes popped open. He'd come back to life, but only after he had experienced a transcendental near-death experience, an NDE. He told a story in the controversial New York Times bestseller, Proof of Heaven, a neurosurgeon's journey into the afterlife, which remained a bestseller for over 67 weeks. Alexander's second book, The Map of Heaven, How Science, Religion, and Ordinary People Are Proving the Afterlife, was published in October 2014. Alexander once again asserts his belief that there is an afterlife and that consciousness is independent of the brain. The controversy continues, his assertions questioned in Newsweek, The Atlantic, and explored by Oprah Winfrey and writer Oliver Sacks. Let's talk. So boy, oh boy, what's that old saying that God doesn't give you more than you can handle? The scientist takes on the stalwart beliefs of the scientific community. Could you have imagined the blowback that you've gotten from this? And you went against your own scientific community and they pounded you, questioned you on every level, tried to destroy your career. I mean, yikes. And I'm so glad, listen to me, that you're here to talk about this such an important book. What a story. Talk to me.
Well, I think it's very important for people to understand, as much as you say, oh, the scientific community has gone after me. In fact, I would say that the leading edges, the most brilliant investigators in the scientific community, and that is certainly those who are far along the pathway of trying to understand the profound mystery of consciousness itself, many of those scientists fully support me. So really, the only attacks have come from materialist scientists who are addicted to pure physicalism or scientific materialism, and from a handful of kind of pseudo-skeptic pseudo-scientists who don't know the first thing about consciousness. So the world is waking up to this, and that includes a waking up that's happening all through the scientific community, and it's really only the kind of fringe of less educated and more simplistic thinking people who have no idea about the mystery of consciousness, they're the ones who might come out and attack me.
Okay, great. And I'm glad that we've got that squared away because I think that's important. But let's, before we really get into the heart of this, let's go back a bit. And for those who don't know, you were a practicing neurosurgeon, you became sick, and then you had your near-death experience, and what we now call NDE. Share with us exactly what you saw and felt.
Well, it all started in a very primitive course, unresponsive realm. Important to point out that my memories of my life, everything of Eben Alexander's life memories were completely gone when I was deep in this journey. And so it started in what I call the Earthworm's Eye View, a very coarse realm. But then I was rescued from that by a slowly spinning white light that took me up into a brilliant gateway valley that was loaded with beautiful, idyllic, earth-like features, beautiful flowers, butterflies, lots of souls dancing below and angelic choirs above. And then from that realm transcended up into higher and higher realms all the way out to what I call the core, that realm of oneness, of you know, completely outside of all of eternity, infinity. I mean, this one has to completely start over again in the understanding of how the world is put together to get this. And yet, the getting of it is perfectly consistent with the extreme mystery facing those who are trying to unravel the phenomenon of consciousness itself. So that's what this is really very much about. But you can't come up with simple little patches and band-aids to try and put this into our general worldly understanding. The only way to really make sense of it is to go back to square one and rework our kind of worldview of how this universe works. And that includes things like going deeply into the measurement problem in quantum mechanics, realizing that each and every one of us has never experienced anything other than the inside of our own consciousness. And that, of course, is a profound truth. It's a fact. It's not even arguable that the only thing we've ever known is our own consciousness. And the world, the mind and brain are so good at convincing us that what we're experiencing is the world out there. But in fact, no human being has ever experienced anything other than a model within mind of what we presume is the world out there. And it's this whole deeper understanding that I think is shaking this world right to its foundations.
Ken, is it fair to say there was nobody more shocked than you?
Well, I would, you know, as I put it, when I came back to this world, my doctors were right. My brain was devastated. So when I first started to wake up after 7 days in coma from meningitis, which had destroyed the neocortex, the outer part of my brain, the human part. When I first came back, I remembered nothing at all of Eben Alexander's life before coma. I had no words or language. I didn't even recognize my mother, my sisters, my sons standing around the bedside. I had no idea who these beings were. And of course, initially, in the first few weeks of trying to figure it all out, I thought, well, given the damage to my neocortex, and do remember, it took about 8 weeks for all my knowledge of brain, mind, consciousness to come back to me after awakening from coma. So in those early weeks, I didn't even really remember what I knew about brain, mind, consciousness. But my doctors told me that I was way too sick with too much devastation to my neocortex to have been able to have experienced anything. And that, of course, was the really deep mystery. And as it all came back to me, I started realizing that this was much more than just a trick of the dying brain. As I told my older son, who was majoring in neuroscience in college at the time, my experience was way too real to be real, which to me meant it had to be some kind of hallucination or drug effect. But it was only in the months after that, reviewing my medical records, talking with the doctors who took care of me, that I realized that there was too much damage to my neocortex for me to even have any kind of rich hallucination or drug effect or, you know, kind of dream state. None of that was left because of the damage to my neocortex. And that's what was such a beautiful gift, because I remembered fully that glorious journey that I describe in the book that happened to me deep in coma. And our conventional neuroscience would very plainly state none of it could have happened at all. But given that it did happen, we then had to understand it. And that's where I think the book's Proof of Heaven and the Map of Heaven help to take people along on the journey of why this is such a deep mystery.
Right. You saw God or felt God?
Absolutely experienced God fully.
Wow.
And that is what I describe in that book. But of course, you know, in our Western culture, we have no remote concept of being able to have conscious identity with an infinitely powerful, all-loving, creative source. And yet so many near-death experiencers for thousands of years from all different cultures, whether they were atheists or had any number of religions, come back with stories that are very similar that paint a universal picture of that infinitely loving deity at the core of all of existence. And yes, I experienced that in its full-blown, astonishing, and absolutely indescribable joy, just as have many millions of near-death experiencers throughout history. And they all bring this same thing back. So I'm certainly not alone with this experience.
So I'm going to interrupt. Aren't you mad that you had to come back?
No, all here for a reason. That was another benefit of my journey, was I got to really see kind of the grander scale of how all this is put together and why. And we are here now to learn these lessons of infinite healing power of unconditional love, to love ourselves and love all our fellow beings. This is the lesson that is incumbent on us to learn as, all of consciousness of the universe is evolving towards that, and all of humanity and all of life on Earth needs to be part of that evolution. So we're here for a reason.
Okay, so let's take this title of yours, Heaven. I'm interested in the fact that what you experienced you call Heaven. I don't want to take that for granted, because why Heaven, not Hell, not Purgatory, Heaven?
Well, I would say, that title was basically from the publisher. What my book and my story is an absolute shocking proof of is that our souls are not limited with the death of the physical body, and that consciousness is not created by the brain. In fact, I've had many people tell me that my book is so much more than just a simple little proof of Heaven. And I think when you get where that's really going and kind of see it at that level, which so many people do see, then we know where we're going with this. And all I'm pointing out is that these experiences are not hallucinations at all. They're actually glimpses into a much more fundamental reality that is the home of our souls and is much more real than this material world. And that is something that's so crucial to get. Now, the fact that the vast majority of people who visit that realm, no matter what their religious beliefs, and they can be very atheistic before it happens, but when they come back, they know something very different. And that is that at the core of this universe, at the core of our very conscious existence, our spiritual reality is of an infinitely loving oneness that we all share. And so that is really what the book is proof of. And it's proof of that in a very solid fashion. The thing it is not proof of is anyone's dogmatic interpretation of religion that limits the view of what that eternal spiritual existence is all about. So in other words, I like to say that proof of Heaven helps to lift us above the false dogma of separation, whether that is a dogma of the various religions, because I was contacted by the mystical practitioners of all the great religions to tell me how my journey was so consistent with their most ancient texts and readings and understanding. The thing to really get here is the dogma is very misleading, and the dogma of separation that many of our religions try and put out there. And this also includes the dogma of separation that tries to pretend that this is discussion between, religion and science, and that one of those is right and the other is wrong. In fact, what I came to see is that science and spirituality move forward together. There's no way either one of them can move forward alone. And in detail here, point out that the deep mystery of the measurement problem in quantum mechanics is an impasse that the materialist scientific community will never move beyond until they realize that consciousness, soul, spirit, and the divine are fundamental in the running of this universe.
I think
so. This is really about rising above all that false dogma and separation.
Right. There is this too. If the scientific community and the spiritual community can't get together on this, they're failing us.
Well, they're failing themselves.
Well, they're also failing us.
I promise you. Well, yes, they are. The materialist scientific community is doomed as it stands anyway, and that's why it's spent more than 100 years struggling with that measurement problem in quantum mechanics, trying to interpret it properly, where the answer is, in my mind, is quite clear, that you start to realize that soul or spirit consciousness is fundamental. It creates the entire universe. This whole material realm emerges out of that. And when you realize that, you start to realize the basis of our spiritual beliefs and that they have a tremendous basis in fundamental reality. Material science is what fails. It fails itself. So, you know, I'm not worried moving forward as we get closer to truth. Materialist scientists will have to abandon that pure materialism because it does not work. I think the spiritual community grows tremendously by realizing the lessons of materialist science, that in fact there's no material to the material world. It's vibrating strings of energy in higher dimensional space-time or what have you, but it's not at all what it appears to be to us down in this material realm in our physical incarnations.
Let me talk to you about this as well, because really isn't this a book of faith proof? You have proof in the title, but you know, faith, there is no proof.
Well, except that this is about the strongest proof about any of this that you will encounter anywhere in our thinking. And in other words, this is consistent with so many other deep thinkers throughout history, spiritual leaders, prophets, mystics over all ages, and that includes those who are deeply into understanding consciousness and the phenomena of the world that we live in. This is a system of thinking that makes much more sense than anything else that I am aware of.
Oh, I didn't say that to dispute what you're saying. I said that because I think faith is a wonderful thing.
Well, it is, but I mean, the deepest reality here is no one can ever be certain of anything.
Exactly.
And proof does not exist in science. Proof exists in mathematics, but it's very erroneous to even think that you have scientific proof. The scientific method is a way of getting towards truth. And I must point out here, very crucial, that so much of the knowledge we gain in this world cannot come out of a strictly applied scientific method. And that is such a myth that you must have the scientific method to believe anything. In fact, there are some things, especially around the phenomenon of consciousness itself, because of its very deep intrinsic nature in our very being, completely rise above any possibility of ever being proven through the scientific method alone. But anecdotal experience, and in fact, I would say all of human experience, is what we need to base our notions of reality on. And our pursuit of truth needs to take all the available information.
Let me throw something else at you. Fear. I want to take this out to that step. How much does fear play in all of this? Fear of something larger than being in control of it all, fear of dying in the unknown, fear of letting go. It seems to me that it would be easier, make us happier, make our lives better if we were to embrace the reality of an afterlife. Yet we thwart the belief in the concept by nature at every turn. And isn't that to our own detriment?
Well, I would say that fear is a tremendous part of the big problem here. For one thing, fear is one of the major tools that the ego has to work with. You know, the ego, our sense of self, uses fear and anxiety, basically anxiety about the past, fear about the future. And that is a tremendous tool. And what I encourage people so much in my talks is to come to realize and remember the eternal and infinitely powerful spiritual beings that we all are, that we're all interconnected as spiritual beings. We're all eternal, and that we're all part of that divine. And the more that one comes to realize the truth of all that and remember that truth from deep within, the more one is able to overcome so much of the badness and apparent evil that one encounters in our material realm and in lower spiritual realms. And certainly people can get very hung up in a fear of death. The evidence and proof of heaven, and especially if you go to my website, evanalexander.com, look at more of the information there, and the scientific information that's emerging with some of the books that I point to, like Irreducible Mind and Beyond Physicalism, I think the day is coming, as Larry Dossey said when he promoted my book, The Map of Heaven, the day is coming because of these kind of books that people who are considered intelligent and intellectual and thoughtful in this world will not doubt at all that we are eternal spiritual beings. They will realize that death is simply a transition, and it's very akin to birth, and that our soul connections do not end with death of the physical body. And I would say that as we get deeper and deeper into the scientific understanding of consciousness, this worldview is inevitable. Everyone will know this, within the next many decades, in the coming century. This will be common knowledge that we're eternal spiritual beings. The whole materialist paradigm is coming to an end because it's woefully inadequate and has absolutely zero to offer up about the relationship between brain and mind and in consciousness. So this is a coming worldview that is, I would say, inevitable. And it's really the death knell for that simplistic, conventional, scientific pseudo-explanation that I used to think governed reality before my coma.
Two quick questions. One is, have you had any other encounters with the other side since?
A tremendous number. I do a lot of work now with sacred acoustics. You can go to sacredacoustics.com to learn more. And it's all about meditation. By going deep into consciousness, each and every one of us can come to know everything that I know from my journey. That's been told to us by deep meditators, Tibetan monks, etc., for thousands of years. They know that we are far more than these physical bodies. Meditation and centering prayer is a great way to get in there. And I use sacred acoustics meditations, which I help to design. I use them daily to return to those realms of my journey. And that is, those are realms that are available to each and every one of us who will put in the work, you know, do the meditation. And like I say, it's not a quick and easy fix. You don't do three meditations and then decide whether or not it's working. I recommend people do this daily and plan on doing it the rest of your life. But that can help all of us to come to know these truths.
The last thing that I want to talk to you about very quickly is something I wish there was an answer to, and that is why death has been left such a mystery by God or a higher power or whatever you want to call out there. Or has it? And it's only that fear that you and I were talking about earlier that is the reason for our lack of understanding about what happens on the other side while we're in this stage of existence.
This kind of an understanding is kind of a stepping stone in the evolution of consciousness towards a much greater understanding of the nature of reality. And part of it at this point in human development, and again, remember that most of the problems we're talking about in terms of not facing death and being confused about death are really peculiar, for the most part, to our Western kind of 20th century and 21st century materialist scientific culture. And many indigenous cultures have never lost sight of the fact that our souls are eternal and connected. And what I see is the great awakening coming to this world is really just kind of returning some of that ancient wisdom and spiritual wisdom that other cultures still have in fairly strong measure and bringing it back into our very impoverished and paltry materialist Western thinking that's lost sight of all of that kind of reality. So this is really about recovering some great wisdom that, of course, before my coma, I was tempted to dismiss as outmoded and now realize that it's just far deeper wisdom than I had in my very simplistic kindergarten-level scientific thinking of brain creates consciousness. I was just absolutely wrong.
I've been speaking with Dr. Evan Alexander, author of the New York Times bestseller, Proof of Heaven, A Neurosurgeon's Journey into the Afterlife, and The Map of Heaven, How Science, Religion, and Ordinary People Are Proving the Afterlife. For more information on Dr. Alexander, visit his website at evanalexander.com, on Facebook under Evan Alexander MD, and on Twitter, his handle is Life Beyond D. Dr. Alyssa Methus is a mother of five who has practiced internal medicine for over 30 years. She is the author of three award-winning parenting books and has lectured on parenting for schools, parents, groups, and corporations. After the death of her 20-year-old son, Eric, by suicide, Dr. Methus began journaling her grief in her blog, channelingeric.com. A strong believer in science, she formerly viewed spiritual matters with skepticism. Once Eric began to communicate with family, friends, and blog members, her entire paradigm shifted. After devouring books on the quantum physics explaining the science behind spirituality, Dr. Methus began her journey towards spiritual understanding and belief. She wrote about her journey in the wildly successful My Son and Afterlife. Now she has written her introduction to her late son's new book, My Life After Death, A Memoir from Heaven. Let's talk. So, Alyssa, for those who don't know Eric's story, briefly tell us about his short life and its violent ending. Tell us about that.
Absolutely, and that's very difficult for me to do, but he was such a happy, happy child, so loving, so giving. I remember taking him to the pediatrician to get all sorts of shots. His eyes were littered with Band-Aids, and I brought him home, tear stains on his cheeks. His papa said, how are you, Eric? And he soothed his father by saying, I have a good time, and patted my shoulder. I mean, he was always concerned about the feelings of others over his own. But then when he became around 14, he developed bipolar disease. He also had learning disabilities, and he had a form of Tourette's in that he didn't say, bad words. Well, he does now, but he didn't say bad words, but he had verbal and motor tics that made him seem sort of odd. So he was the target of a lot of bullies. Even teachers bullied him. One math teacher said, "You're stupid," to him, for example. But nonetheless, he was still so loving toward people. He would go to Starbucks in our neighborhood very often, and I think he wanted to meet friends. He was lonely, and of course, he probably wanted to bum smokes because Dr. Medhus would not let him have any cigarettes. And for some reason, more often than not, people would gravitate toward him, strangers, and they would sit, and then they would talk, and they would share their life story, which was often very sad. And when they started crying, he would grab them up at a big hug and say, "Look, dude, I'm going to take you home to my house, and my mom's going to make you a home-cooked meal." That was always a big surprise to me, but he always had these lost souls that he wanted to take under his wing. But bipolar disease is a tough one.
Yeah.
You know, it's very often a terminal disease, and in his case, it was. And so on October 6, 2009, he died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head, and my life has changed forever.
Here's the thing, grief. Who can even imagine the compendium of emotions that a mom must live with at the death of a son, particularly when it's a suicide? No mom should have to bury their child. How in the world did you deal with this?
Well, I had a hard time. I really did. My life was cleaved in two. It was the before and the after. It was like an atom bomb went off in our entire family. But things changed 3 days after his death when my father, who is a militant atheist and was not really a very nice man, so he's not the type of person to actually try to soothe my feelings by making up a story like this, called me in a panic. And he said, "Alisa," I was sitting in my chair reading the paper, and all of a sudden I look up and there's Eric standing right in front of me. And then he turns into his little boy self and crawls into my lap. Oh my gosh, I don't know what to believe. I'm so startled. There we go. See, I was raised by atheists, so I didn't, as a scientist, I was taught that something didn't exist unless you could perceive it with your senses or measure with an instrument. So that whole question of, is Eric alive anywhere, was very difficult. But when that happened to my father, that's when I started my journey from skepticism to belief.
Let me stop you there for a second, because you said you were raised by atheists. What were your beliefs as an adult?
I know this sounds kind of ridiculous, but I didn't really have much in the way of beliefs. When I was really little and I was abused physically, just brutally in my childhood, I came to a point where I asked God, and I must have been 8 years old, "If you exist, prove it to me." And she never did. And so I dismissed the whole idea about God, heaven, any survival of consciousness after death out of my mind. And, I got busy with a very busy practice and raising 5 children. So I didn't really have time to contemplate many things, much less that.
So it wasn't core to your life at that point. So to deal with your grief, you started this blog, Channeling Eric. And for anybody who wants to find it, it's terrific. It's called Channeling Eric, Eric spelled with a K.com. Talk to me about the blog.
Oh, the blog has been my lifeline. My daughter, Christina, is very good with the computer, created it for me. And it was really designed as a way to help vent my grief. Maybe this is part of the doctor in me. I seem to heal better when I help others. So I wanted to provide some sort of community so that other people could share their pain, but feel supported supported and safe. And that's what happened. But at the same time that I was receiving all these crazy pranks, which we can talk about, from Eric, blog members from all over the world started seeing Eric and experiencing all these pranks. This one gentleman from Ireland, Damien, I'll never forget this. He called me and said, "Look, your son was just standing in front of me." I go, "What?" Because at that point, I did not believe in any of this life after death thing, or I certainly wasn't sure about it. And he said, "Yeah." And he said, "Dude, I bet I could tell you how far away your girlfriend is from you." And at that time, she was living in Canada, so she was quite far away. He gave Damien a certain number of X thousand kilometers and was really very, very close, within just a few meters. So, and that began the whole pranking the Channeling Eric blog member phenomena. It's just become an incredible phenomena now.
You mentioned that he went to your father first, and some of the blog members were visited by him, and but not you in the beginning. Did that insult you? It would have insulted me.
Oh, it did. It hurt my feelings, you know, so much. Because, you know, as a mother, when you lose a child, you always think, well, did I do something wrong? Or was there something I could have done that could have saved his life? So guilt was, you know, a big ingredient in all that. But I learned later, and Eric taught me this through a medium, that sometimes those who grieve the deepest are the last ones to connect to a loved one. And it's there's a physics reason for this. You know, everything is energy, Hallie, everything. I mean, even thoughts, emotions, matter. Einstein referred to matter as frozen light. Everything is energy, and all energy has its very unique spot on the electromagnetic spectrum where it vibrates. So it vibrates at its own specific frequency. Now, when you are really down, like I was, the vibration you know, the frequency of your vibration is very low, okay? So you have this electromagnetic spectrum where you have infrared rays and radio waves and cosmic rays and UV rays, et cetera. Well, we occupy a very, very narrow spectrum, a little tiny sliver called the visible range. That's where we are. When you're grieving, your vibrational frequency is so low, it's at the bottom end of that range. So for a spirit who vibrates, at, you know, once it doesn't have a body anymore, vibrates at a higher frequency to get down all the way down to where that grieving mother is, it's very difficult for them to lower their vibrational frequency that much. And, you know, that's why we use terms like I'm so depressed. I'm so low.
Right, down.
I'm feeling low. I'm feeling down. This is the, you know, the reflection of our vibrational frequency. On the other hand, it's like I feel high as a kite. I'm over the moon. You feel light. You feel less dense when you're happy. So I started just thinking positive thoughts. I started remembering, although it was painful at first, some of the happy times Eric and I had together. And all of a sudden, I saw him.
So talk to me about that. Talk to me about that first visit.
Oh, gosh. That was just a magical moment. And I've had several since then. I remember, you know, I was tired. I went to bed and I just laid my head down. In fact, I don't even think I had time to lay my head down on the pillow when all of a sudden I saw Eric jumping from one foot of the bed to the next like a bunny rabbit. He was acting like a little kid. And my deceased sister's niece was sitting on the left foot of the bed looking at him. And I know she was thinking, you're just acting like a fool. I just couldn't believe it. Because, you know, I'm a scientist. This is not supposed to happen. I'm not supposed to see this. And I followed him back and forth with my eyes, just not knowing what to believe, knowing full well I was awake. And then all of a sudden, Eric turns to me and says, and I hear him, Mom, you can see me. And he rushes into my arms and we hug. I'm telling you, Hallie, I felt him like he was just solid, like our many, many hugs in the past when he was alive. Wow. It was amazing. But, you know, being the skeptic I was, let me back up and say, I really did not want to believe that Eric still existed. And I know that sounds terrible for a mother to say, but I didn't, because what if I did? What if I bought it hook, line, and sinker? And then found out it was all some big farce. That would be losing him all over again, but permanently. So I dug my heels on this. I really did. This is not the wishful thinking of a grieving mother, by all means. But so after that, time passed and doubt creeped in. And this happened with all the amazing things that happened to us, watching faucets turn on, watching as unplugged appliances started working, watching as airsoft BBs appear to the ceiling and drop to the floor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I just couldn't get from 90% sure to 100% sure until one particular thing happened that changed things forever.
And that was?
I received a call. You know, I'd been talking to Eric through a medium, although I did channel him myself, well, not as well as Jamie does, of course. And so we had all these recorded sessions. Well, a blog member heard one of the sessions we had that was recorded a year and a half earlier and said, Elisa, look, I hear three voices on this. And my first thought was, no, that's impossible, because it's just me and Jamie there. It's impossible. But of course I listened, and yep, I heard three voices, one of which was Eric's, and I have absolutely no doubt. I know the sound of my own child's voice. He had this way of saying breakfast like a little kid, breakfast. Breakfast. He also had this verbal tick of clearing his throat that was there. And I heard him pace, the incessant pacing that I heard. He wore a groove in our tile around our kitchen island because of his pacing. It was just amazing. So anyway, that was not enough for me, though. I was sure, 99.99% sure, but I decided to have it analyzed, the scientist that I am, by a sound professional. And that sound professional concluded that for many reasons, these voices were not human. And one big reason was that the voice left no voice print, which is virtually impossible if the voice would have been human. And so there I am, 100% sure, never going back.
So listen to me. In the interest of time, this is a question I must ask you. I would have been scared out of my mind if this, whether it was my son or not, appeared and embraced and carried. What were you feeling? Were you fearful? Were you amazed? Question your own sanity? Maybe I'm crazy? Did those thoughts cross your mind the first time you encountered him?
Great question. I wasn't afraid because it's Eric. I know his energy. I feel his energy. Basically, when you lose somebody, you don't really lose them. They just don't have a body anymore. That's the only difference.
And well, you know that now.
Mental and physical illness that might have plagued that body in life. So they are no different. You just can't see them anymore than we can't see radio waves. So we believe in radio, right? Mm-hmm. But we can't see it. So why can't we believe that spirits exist? But no, I felt numb. I don't know. I felt it was just so surreal. Now, if I had been asleep and opened my eyes and Eric was like 1 inch from my face and yelled, boo, I probably would have been afraid. But no, it just was a very loving experience, Hallie.
Well, that's a good thing. I'm glad to hear that because that would open you up for more and to go down that thing. I'm going to talk to Jamie Butler in a little bit, but I want to ask you this. One is, why did you use Jamie to channel him? Could he not channel through you? And how did you and Jamie quickly get together?
Well, after the experience with my father, I was intrigued enough about the potential of consciousness survival that I started reading a lot of books, quantum physics of spirituality, near-death experiences, alternate dimensions. And then I read some studies, controlled studies on mediums. And so I had read that a lot of parents will resort to using a medium to connect with their child. Now, if you had asked me a year before Eric's death about a medium, I would have thought, you know, it would have conjured up this image of a gypsy hunched over a crystal ball. Right. But I thought, well, you know, I have nothing else to lose. I don't have anywhere else to go. So I did try a number of mediums. Some of them were just terrible. And Jamie was amazing. When I called her, she knew my name only and probably my credit card number. But she did not know I had a son, much less one that had killed himself. Yeah, the first thing she said was, your son is here, and he said he took his life. And she went on, and this was very difficult for her, to describe where he was, you know, the fact that he was sitting at his desk, the fact that he used a gun, exactly what kind of gun he used, the exact description of the clothing he was wearing, and she even captured his personality, his mischievousness, and his sailor talk, which is very difficult. She has a hard time sharing Eric's F-bombs with the public, let me tell you. So, I was intrigued enough to continue to book more sessions. And she's just proven her gift to me so many times over. Many times in these radio interviews, Eric will actually leave his voice. For example, and this is just one, a radio host called me and said, look, Elisa, I heard a voice that we did not hear live. And so I listened to the timestamp she gave me, and there was Eric saying, minions, really loudly. Nobody heard this. It was really loud. And then Jamie immediately says he's calling them minions. So this is a real deal.
Fascinating. Of everything that has happened over this period of time that he's revealed and shared, what's the most important lesson that you think you learned through him?
Well, I think that just because somebody dies doesn't mean you stop having a relationship with them. I have a relationship still with Eric. I talk to him all the time. And there are many techniques I use to do that that's probably beyond the scope of this interview. But, you know, they don't want to be forgotten. They want the relationship to continue. And just because you can't see them doesn't mean that you shouldn't.
I was thinking about this. Listen to where I'm going with this. I was thinking about all of this. People's fear of death, for that matter, people's fear of life. Some people just don't gel on Earth. Eric was one of those. And I was thinking about the fact that even if all of us, if this wasn't true, what you're saying, right? The naysayers, you and I both know they're way out there. I was thinking to myself that the real gift of all of this is faith. You know?
Yes. Yes. It's so hard for a scientist like me to have faith, but I have learned that. And I tell you, I really, and I know this is going to rock the world of a lot of mothers perhaps, but I don't really grieve over Eric anymore, because there's just been too much hard evidence to deny his continued existence, number one. Number two, I continue to have a relationship with him. But number three, his memoirs, transcribing his memoirs in the new book, My Life After Death, A Memoir from Heaven, you know, has changed things for me, because I know how he's doing, and he's doing great. I know how his life as a spirit is, and I know almost everything about this new place he calls home. So the mystery's all but gone. Now, I do miss him, but it's almost like a mother missing a child who's on, I don't know, some study abroad program, and they're going to come back home, march through the front door with a big old bag full of dirty laundry. That's how I feel. And it's just a blessing to have that change.
You can call him up as you will, or is he in control?
Oh, no. We're both in control.
You're both in control.
Mama has the upper hand, though. He'll come when I ask.
It's the way it's supposed to be. It's definitely the way it's supposed to be. The last place that I want to go with you on this is, did you ever wish you could cross over to be with him?
Oh, yes. Yes. And, you know, I got into a very dark place once and tried, but fortunately was saved by my youngest daughter. I feel so bad about that, but you almost get into a trance, you know, just that time, 1 o'clock in the afternoon was the time he shot himself. And every time, every day, the 1 o'clock came around, I would have to drive out to a parking lot somewhere and park and just scream. It was just, Eric and I were just so close. I'm close to all my children, and you know, it was very difficult. And in retrospect, I'm so glad that I decided to hang on.
It's interesting to me, because in the scope of this story, life, death, they're the same. It's all part of the compendium. Doesn't matter which side you're really on. It's fascinating. I've been speaking with Dr. Elizabeth Menhus, co-author of My Life After Death, A Memoir from Heaven. For more information about the book and Dr. Menhus, visit her website at channelingeric.com. As long as Jamie Butler can remember, she has been able to see the lights surrounding people and inanimate objects, which she refers to as energy fields. Along with seeing energy, she sees spirits, making her a clairvoyant and hearing them as a clairaudient. As a child, she would play hide-and-go-seek with her spirit friends, but as an adult, they give her great insight and guidance. She's a channeler, working with guides from the other side. She's learned how to channel spirit, which is when a spirit relays messages by borrowing her body and voice to communicate to others. In 2000, she received a master hypnotherapist degree from the New York Institute and later launched Love and Light, LLC, designed to support, create, and inspire spiritual growth through public channeling, guest lectures, classes, and private sessions for all ages. In the new book, My Life After Death, A Memoir from Heaven, by Eric Menhus, the renowned medium channeled the late Eric Menhus. Let's talk first to Jamie Butler, and perhaps to Eric. Let's talk. Okay, Jamie, you know, and I know, this is a lot for some listeners to absorb. For those who think channeling or talking to the dead is crazy, what do you say?
Frankly, I usually take two steps back, because I enjoy people's viewpoints, their skepticism, you know, and let them have it. But when they really come to me and just ask how, like, really, is it true, or is it just something that maybe you're being imaginative about? And the way I know how to explain it best is, when we come into this life, we are kind of taught that some things are possible and some things are impossible. And as we get older and death becomes a part of our language, we describe death as being something that is a separate. You know, you are then lost. You are away from each other.
So from Dr. Menhus's opening to the heart of My Life After Death, A Memoir from Heaven, this is pretty extraordinary. But it's not for you. that interests me. So first tell me your story. You were born with the gift or something you developed? What?
Yes, we can call it a gift if you would like. I like to consider it more as an ability. We don't think of our sense of smell as being a gift. It's just something that we innately have and use. And in my life, I grew up seeing lights and energy spirits around me. I believe that everybody else had that too. So it wasn't something that I jumped around and went, look at that, because I just knew everybody else was seeing it. But as soon as I was growing up, my parents, my mother especially, was very keen in letting me know that I needed to let go of some of these stories. My fingers are in air quotes there, and imaginary friends. And in doing that, I kind of lost a big part of myself. It was a sacrifice saying goodbye to these things. As soon as I went away to college when I was 18, all of it came back. The energy, the lights, the visuals, the hearing them communicate, the words. And of course, now I'm old enough to realize that what I'm doing is not the mainstream. This is different and odd and not accepted. And I was embarrassed and I didn't like it. And I lost a lot of friends. I called my family, my dad, and I said, hey, you know, I'm going crazy. Something's really wrong with me. And at age 18, my dad said, well, you know, you probably should talk to your grandmother about it. And I found out that it runs in my family. My grandmother was very warm to the idea about me keeping the abilities and using them to help other people. I was very keen about getting rid of it. I tried everything to get rid of it, to turn it off. And really, it was just like self-destruction in the process of doing so.
So what is it that you actually do differently or experience differently than other people?
It is easy for me to see subtle light energy. I'm not made any different, but I think I just came in maybe a little like a savant, kind of like Mozart playing the piano. Some people are just better at certain abilities than others with a natural hint to it. And to boil it down, I'd say I have the ability to see and hear subtle light energy.
Now, you subtle light energy, you need to define that.
We can define it in several ways. Off of every inanimate object and living object is energy. Science can now measure it. We can see it with the naked eye. It kind of goes a little bit beyond our visual spectrum. And it also kind of bleeds into saying I see spirits or ghosts as well.
In my head, interesting, spirit is different than ghost. In my head, spirit is vibration, energy, whatever. Ghost has a physical presence. Is that the same for you?
Oh, that's interesting. Right. For me, there is a difference between spirit and ghost. For me, spirit is the soul from within somebody that has now transitioned over into other dimensional planes, whether we want to call that heaven or home. And the ghost, for me, is a soul that has transitioned from a physical body, but really didn't go elsewhere to a dimensional plane. It kind of remained earthbound.
Right. And there's a visual to that.
Yeah. Some people tend to see ghosts more often than spirits, only because I think ghosts are a little bit more rowdy.
Okay. Is there a negative to a ghost versus a spirit?
Negative.
Negative meaning it's purgatory. They're stuck. They can't get over. There's a reason they're not Holy Spirit. Is there a difference there?
I would say yes, then. Yes. And it's often from a quick transition or business left untended to. And sometimes being earthbound is that entity's heaven, slice of heaven. They don't want to go anywhere else.
Okay. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I've thrown all my rules out on this one.
Let's go.
I want to just go with you on this one. So my next question, obviously, is how did you and Eric meet? Did he summon you or did you go to him or how'd that happen?
Yeah. So in my career, I do readings and I do most of mine on the phone and I'll get a name and a number. And I know that that's the person I'm going to talk to. And it was Elisa Merus. And that was her phone number. It showed up. And so I sat down, I meditated on her name. And when I was meditating on her, this young kid came in, slender, had this messy kind of curly hair with these pretty eyes. And I thought, oh my God, how nice is this? You know, he looks like a little angel. And the mother came on the phone. I didn't know it was a mother. Elisa came on the phone and I described, hey, there's this kid here. And then this angelic visual appearance that I had with him started to change because he was talking with such great detail about death, his suicide, why, when, how. And there were details that I had not come across in other readings of mine. You know, normally, I guess in my sessions, the spirits tend to sugarcoat things or just kind of glaze through and really help the person understand. But in Eric's situation, he really wanted his mom to have the details because he was explaining, Mom, if you have the details, your imagination won't run wild with you anymore. And you'll be able to know what I went through and why. And then this language came out of him, this F-bombs and all these cussing words. And I was just like, oh my God, I got something wrong here. You know, like I don't have that stuff in my work. We don't do this. And Elisa just jumped in. She goes, oh, Jamie, please repeat everything he says. That's the way he talked when he was alive. That's just who he was. And this is probably one of the first ways that Eric challenges me.
I have to stop you because you said you had a visual in your mind or visual he was there in your presence?
Oh, it's great. The way that I see spirit is they are outside of me. They're not a visual inside of my head, but they look transparent, like those old transparencies they used to use in college. You mm-hmm. show the image up on the wall. You can see the color, the shape, the lines, but you can also look right through them, right at the detail of the wall as well.
Has he been available to other channelers?
Yes.
He has. Okay. And that's a question that I want to get to, which is on this channeling thing. Could anybody? Are only channelers able to, or, you know, whatever you want to call yourself within medium channel or what? Or could I? Could I summon him?
I am a huge advocate that I am not made any different than you, but my belief system might be. So technically, if I'm looking at you, I say, absolutely, you can channel. You can see them. You can communicate to them. It's just a new way of having a relationship. It's not human to human. It's just human to energy. And we're made of energy. So it's almost like getting to the core of really who you are and how you function.
And not being afraid, because I think fear has a lot to do with it, doesn't it?
It is. That's the belief system part I'm talking about. I don't mean it that you have to believe in spiritualism or religion per se, or even God, if we're getting deep into it. It's the belief that when we die, we still exist. It's a transition. It's not a separation. And then understanding really that subtle energetic body that we do possess. I mean, we look at ourselves and we go, oh yeah, that skin, that tan, those freckles, that's where my body stops, but it doesn't. It goes 2 to 3 feet out from that. And we have a whole world of senses and information that we can collect within that space. And getting used to doing that and learning how to do that is the way to go ahead and communicate to spirit or your loved ones.
Okay. Now you say that you see him. So is that a soul that you're seeing, the light of his energy that you're seeing of his soul, or is he the ghost?
That would be the light of his energy.
Okay. Okay. And I want to make this clear too, that for sure it was at his mom's request that you went to him or he and you guys met up.
Yes. So before I begin my sessions, I focus on the person's name, which was Elisa's, and I asked for loved ones, angels, guides, relatives, friends, everyone to come forward that's going to speak to me in an honest way. And I do, you can kind of say an intent or a blessing, and I call them forward. And he was the one that came forward and didn't let anybody else come in. That was the entertaining thing. It was just one. And I'm used to having several come in, you know, so I can play off of them. He was very adamant about communicating to her and giving her the details.
So the book, My Life After Death, A Memoir from Heaven, by, it doesn't say by, but it says Eric Medhus with Alyssa Medhus. It doesn't say Jamie, and it should.
No, I'm just the translator.
Yeah, well, whatever. But, you know, takes a lot of your energy. So talk to me how this was his idea.
Oh, he thought it would be hysterical to have a book written from a dead dude. That's how he says it.
Well, here we are. Let's talk to the dead dude. Can we try and talk to the dead dude? And can he?
Absolutely.
I'm really looking forward to meeting him. He's quite the prankster. He's got a potty mouth. We've kind of established that, but I want to make sure that in case he does say anything that might be seemingly offensive, don't be offended. He, after all, when he passed, he was only a young boy, a young man. So do you have to do something? Do you have to get into a state of mind in order to connect?
No, I don't. It's a very natural process for me. It doesn't require a certain amount of focus. It's more of like having a conversation with someone, picking up a phone.
Now, can he hear me or you have to translate?
No, he'll be able to hear you. So you can speak directly to him and I'll be very clear about when he is talking and when I am talking.
Okay, folks. So this is a first for me. Here we go. Eric, what a pleasure to meet you. Thank you for doing this and coming here. We're quite grateful. I want to first talk about the way that you passed away, because I think it's essential to your story. You wound up being where you are, but committing suicide. I want to talk about that first. Is that because Earth and you just didn't gel together and it was time to move on?
He said, just didn't get along. He said, hey, what's up? He said, you are taking this all in stride, man. I am so impressed.
Well, that's just me. But I'm impressed, too, that you're here and you're opening yourself up to this because, you know, who knows? You don't know me from Adam. Who knows what I could say, right?
He says, oh, man, I've already checked up on you.
Uh-oh.
I've gone through all your descriptions. And he says, I went to your house. He goes, you got a lot on your hands there. He goes, we can talk about that one later.
Yes, he says, I
love how on your website you're described by 4 F's. And he goes, you think I'm the dirty one? The four F's.
I don't even remember what those 4 F's. I haven't been to my website to look lately, but I hope they're good 4 F's, Eric. I really, really do.
He's nodding his head. Yes,
they're good. They're okay. So talk to me about this book. Why really did you want this book to be written?
He's kind of shaking his hands. He goes, I didn't mean to take you off track.
No. You can't take me off track.
I'm really fucking good at that.
Go ahead.
You were talking about me meshing with Earth, why to choose this book, all that shit. So basically, I wanted to do it because I find that it's most important to boil down all this big talk about energy and spiritualism and life after death and all this craziness that when we talk about it, we think that it's so far out of reach and it's sci-fi. He goes, I want to make it small. I want to make it digestible. I want to make it common day language. And he says, you know, part of it that pisses me off so much is that I don't have the language that I want to use. And he goes, and this is sometimes why I resort to, as Jamie calls it, the sailor talk. But the language that we have on Earth is so linear. It's so entrapping that we're often saying shit that we don't really mean. And it's not lining up energetically. So we have a ton of untruths. So I was hoping that in writing this book, I could kind of take some of this and weed it out and simplify it, that when we die, there is no ultimate end, that we continue to live on, and that everyone can continue the relationship with whomever died, be it your dog, your niece, the tree in your backyard. I mean, man, so much is living here on Earth, they don't even get recognition.
The word die has a very negative connotation. Is that what we want die to be? To die is negative?
No, it sucks that it's like that. Die should be like written out in cursive only, maybe with a pink magenta flare and some glitter and a bow on it. Like it's this friend, it's this transition. We don't say the word birth and think total devastation and separation, but that's exactly what death is. You'll laugh your ass off when you get here, man. You'll turn around and look and go, die? Ha, I was just born.
Heaven? Is it heaven?
You can call it heaven, yeah. I'm with you on that one.
What about hell?
He goes, that's a funny topic.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, they're described as being separate, you know, from God's source, separate from all that is. How the fuck do you get separate from all that is? Mm. He's just laughing right now.
Just tell him. I think he's probably right about that. If there's godliness, how do you get to what's that negative stuff?
Yeah, he says you can't.
Right.
In fact, we can look at hell as being like this pretend spot. You know, you pretend that you're separate. Therefore, it's in your belief system and then you feel it, but it's not real. But if we're looking at it from where I'm standing, closest I can get to hell is you're alive in a body, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that is the furthest kind of boxed off separation that you can get from all it is. But it's not hell like everybody described it, with devil and brimstone and fire.
Well, what about on Earth? You know, that old expression, hell on earth. Life wasn't so terrific on Earth. I mean, if it could go wrong, it went wrong from the day you were born. So is where you are a higher place, an earned place?
Ah, he's pointing his finger at the phone. He goes, let's talk about that. Because when we're looking at earned or higher, it's a form of measurement, right? You're looking at it as being better than. When energetically, when you get here, you shed that need for measurement. That's a total human quality. And it's so hard to unzip from and understand kind of in general what I'm saying, because it's so ingrained that this is your left hand, this is your right hand, that they can never be one hand together. like right and wrong can never be just is, right? You got to have a description, one direction or the other. Here, it's not like that. We don't need it. Where I am now, do I enjoy it more? Yeah. Yeah. There's no lying here. You know, it's all available.
The judgment's gone. The judgment's gone. Yeah. I hear that. Good. Was he finished? You finished there?
I like that one. We should end on that. Judgment's gone, period. Judgment gone equals heaven, period.
Okay, I like it. I like it. I like it a lot. And I want to talk about this then. This earth thing, you know, we all have a lot of definitions of what life on earth is for. Is that something you wanted us to understand and what you wanted to put into this book of yours?
I did, and I did. Because when people find out how I died, they go, ah, man, you know, he took the cheap way out, right? He committed suicide. And, you know, there's a lot of things there are great to talk about. Suicide is seen as something that is unacceptable. That is, you know, the coward's way out. And it suggests that I didn't value life, which was total bullish. I love to talk about how valuable life is, and I would fight for it in a heartbeat. But when the time is done, when it's over, it's over. And that could be by suicide or car accident or cancer, you know, or old age. It's over. It's done. But while you're alive, it is valuable. And I talk to so many people living on earth, especially ones that come to the blog. You know, they're hurting. They want to go ahead and leave this world because it's so hard. And I tell them, don't. You know, let's find the joy of why you chose to be here. Let's finish this thing.
Okay. The choice of being here. So, Eric, it's our choice to be here?
Yep.
Okay. And the purpose of life is?
He's looking around the room. He shifts his weight over to one side. He says, well, I would say the purpose of life is to experience emotion.
Interesting answer. And with that answer, I guess the next thing would be, so where you are now, Eric, is your job to be doing what you're doing, talking to me, writing your book, getting that book out, turning the message? And is your job different than other people around you or souls around you?
I like the word job. I get it because it's something that I do. It's something that I dedicate myself to. Some other words that would go well is purpose, passion. And yeah, my job is slightly different from those that are around me. I hang out a lot with, he just said dead people. And I was like, sure, you don't want to use another word? I didn't mean to correct him, but sometimes it's so horrible.
No, because I'm telling everybody today, I'm talking to dead people. Like the movie.
Really? Oh, God, it's funny.
I mean, yeah, that's what I tell. I said, this is what I'm doing today. Listen to this interview. I mean,
it's
right?
So odd, because that's a term I tend to avoid, you know, because...
Well, it has that connotation, but, you know, we need to define death. I mean, redefine death. I think, you know, I wanted to do this show because I really, truly believe we've got this concept of death really wrong in the Western world these days. And I was hoping maybe we could, you know, shed some light. Interesting choice of word that just came out of me on the subject of death. Yes. But Eric, this work that you do, this job that you have, assigned or a choice? Choice.
Yeah,
okay.
Total choice.
Okay.
It was like, I'm more myself here than I ever could manifest on earth. You know, my mental illness with bipolarism, I couldn't crack out of it. I couldn't do expression. And now that I'm here, I can. And I have a yearning to bring people together, especially I really love the topics that people don't talk about, like death, like suicide. These excite me because there's such a closed-minded, woo-woo, taboo sense on it, and it creates such suffering in our culture and for many people around the world. Because I want to be the one to shed some light on it, right?
Right.
Put some light in it, get people talking about it, make it average, make it usable, make it powerful, make it love.
So, potty mouth.
Yes.
So this is what I want to say to you. So, I don't know, you know, I think heaven, I think angels, I think goodness, I think...
fucking angels, right?
And I love it, and I want to know, I mean, what's the deal? So our concept of angels may be entirely wrong as well as our concept of death.
Yep.
Eric, are you an angel?
I like to pose as one, but no. So when we talk about angel, really, it's that kind of pure light source. It's that pure energy that hasn't incarnated into human life forms, but has great communication between all of life forms and to all that is. So it's a beautiful bridging kind of a purpose for them.
Hmm, interesting.
So I've incarnated to Earth many times.
In what way? Tell me what that means. What does that mean?
Oh, you know, like a lot of us use the term reincarnation. You know, like we're going to pretend time's linear when it's not. But I say incarnation. So I've chosen many lives on Earth and elsewhere to live, to have experiences, to enhance my soul, my character, myself. You've done the same, my friend.
Oh, I'm sure I have. You know, the interesting thing here is one tends to think in a linear way about all of this.
Totally. That's ruining it, right?
And that's wrong. You can't. And a lot is going on at the same time in different time and space. Yes?
Yes, it is. Ding, right. Ding, ding.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, you know, we're having this conversation. I think that needs to be pointed out, well pointed out. Okay, now I'm going to break from you for a second because you brought up me. What's going on in my life?
This is your treading water, my friend.
I'm treading water. How am I treading water?
He says you've gotten to a place in your life where you're experiencing death and dying. And that makes one's life go on hold. So energetically, when you're looking at them, it looks like they're in this beautiful Caribbean blue ocean, treading some water, getting some sun, learning something new.
Ah, so should I speak on air about what I'm going through? Would that be helpful? Or should I just leave that between you and I? You tell me.
Oh, he says, honestly, any kind of storytelling that comes from the heart is helpful to those who are listening.
Okay. So my 93-year-old mom is transitioning. She's in hospice care.
Oh.
In my home right now. In the other, I'm in my office home right now recording this, and she's in the other room on her way out, on her way over. And it's been a really, 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 really extraordinary experience. So you kind of caught that. It's been going on for some time, and we're pretty close to the final parts of it. And wow.
He says, you're close to the transition.
Yeah, yeah.
He said, well, most people would say you're getting to the end. And that's a visual term.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then most people are going to tell you, sorry for your loss. Now that's visual too. There's no loss here.
There, but it is extraordinary going through this experience because it's a very different trip from my point of view than it is hers. So that's fascinating. But I digress because I really want to talk about you and the message that you want to leave us with. And I'm watching that clock and I can't even believe we've gone through so much so fast. I wish we had a whole lot more time. Bottom line, Eric, talk to me. What do you want to say to my audience?
I want to remind everybody that we're not human beings, that we're emotional beings, and that you chose this life. You consciously walked into this, and you did it so that you could expand the way that you feel. Basis of everything here is expression of emotion, without the judgment, without the good, the bad, just expression of exactly who you are. And when you get to a place like you're escorting your mom to the most beautiful part of her life, you find out what emotional honesty really is.
Hmm.
He's complimenting you.
For what? What? Why?
He says, ma'am, we look at your life and the four F's of how you're described. He said that you've tackled everything that's come your way. You've rarely said no. That's not an easy feat to do. And it's not done haphazardly. You did it with care by saying yes. And you recognized the kind of attention that you want to receive when you are in need is the same that you're giving right now. So you've mastered the art of living. You're giving what you really want to receive, and you're good with it. Most people do it out of spite, and they complain when they do it, and then they don't like it because they feel like it was a sacrifice. But you really come from a place of honesty. And he goes, I hope everybody listening gets online, learns more about you, listens to more of your interviews, and sees that what you're inquiring about and what you're doing is to grow people, to enhance them, not to entertain them per se, which side effect is pure entertainment, I can tell you. But you're coming from a place of uncovering. And he goes, I really admire that. And that's somewhere that I am coming from. I'm just doing it from a different side. You're uncovering life. I'll uncover death. He goes, together we can be a team, eh?
Come back and see me sometime. Come and visit, and I hope I won't get scared the first time I notice you. And that's, but I'm open. And I say this, life, this is what I live by, Eric. Life is to be gulped, not sipped.
Oh, that's great. He loves that.
Guess what? Same thing with death.
To be gulped, not sipped.
Go for it. Go for the gusto. It's all a part of it all, right?
Yes.
I've been speaking with clairvoyant Jamie Butler.
For more information on Jamie and her truly extraordinary work, visit her on Facebook at Jamie Butler Medium, at her website withloveandlight.com, and on her blog channelingeric.com. You can find her on Twitter at Jamie Butler. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Helen Kesser-Jane Show, a production of RESEC LLC. Associate producer, Suzanne Probst. Music by Tony Rosales Jazz. Visit HelenKesserJane.com.